Blog Talk Radio.
Peace, peace. Collective Minds Radio. We back in the building for another great build. This is Brother Kevin. I'm with Love Lachey. Well, formerly Love Lachey, now Rigel Starr. And my brother Mufasa Ra. What's up, y'all?
Hey, how y'all doing?
All right. Right. What's good, y'all? How y'all week been? Everything been good?
I am doing great.
Yeah,
there
I'm still
trying to be
one of the
Yeah, I'm enough for y'all and had me out Friday, late Friday night.
Yeah, yeah, we took another field trip to see Black Panther again, and you know, I picked up on a few things that I missed the first time, so you know, it was a good trip. So this is part three of the Black Panther discussion. We gonna discuss the relationship between blacks in America or Africans in America and Africans on the continent. You know, but before we get started, do y'all have any announcements we want to take care of? Loveless, Roger Starr, any announcements?
No announcements to make.
No, I ain't got no announcements right now.
Okay.
Well, you know what? Hey, you know, we can make this. We can make these announcements now. You know, for everybody listening, if y'all. For me, you put the brother Young Pharaoh. We're hoping to have him on our show next weekend to have a discussion about the origins of the white man. So hopefully, schedule permitting, we'll have the brother on and we can build with the young guy, put our minds together and see if we can come up with a agreement on where the so-called white man of the Caucasian race came from. And also coming down the pipe, I'm trying to build on this relationship with the Hebrew Brothers ISUPK. So if we can get that squared away, then we'll be bringing one of them brothers on too to go into a couple of biblical questions and see if the brothers can take it on the high seat. We're gonna put them on the high seat and grill them as far as they doctrine. So.
Well, maybe
indeed.
I see them grilling them, but we're just having a
We grilling. We having a dialogue, right? We having a build. Yeah, we don't want to be coming at them, brother. We just building with them.
We're gonna interrogate that brother.
No.
They can take it.
Indeed. So yeah, looking forward to that. That's coming down the pipe, family. So. Be on the lookout for that. You know, Collective Minds is definitely trying to provide some good content, some good dialogue, some good builds, you know, so we can just move the people and the culture forward. You know what I'm saying? That's what we're trying to do. Trying to elevate the mind, elevate people to their, you know, to their higher self. So be on
the
lookout for them shows. And tonight's deal, though, this should be a Yes, sir.
Get in line with the divine.
Yes, sir. Get in line with that divine. I like that. That should be on a T-shirt. You dig? I like that. But, yeah, so tonight's build, this is part three of our Black Panther series, probably the last one, and we want to dive into we've been diving into the different dynamics of the movie, but with this particular dynamic, we want to examine the relationship, again, between Black Americans. Some say African Americans, Negro, color, whatever, but Americans, I mean black people in America versus Africans on the continent. You know, because I've been seeing a lot of questions like, but some people still debate, truthfully, y'all, are we the same people? You know, are we the same as the Africans? We could probably start right there. You know, what do y'all think? Are we the same as the Africans on the continent, or are we different?
I say we're the same.
Go ahead, Roger.
I say we're the same, but we do. There are differences, because nobody or nothing is just 100% exact anyway. We're not,
right,
of course, twin-like, but no, we're the same.
Okay. What you say, Mufasa?
I'm going to say, no, we ain't the same. But they are, but the people from there are, we come from the same bloodline. We share a bloodline and an origin, so they are, we have ancestors over there, but no, we are not the same. Because us being over here in this land has changed our dynamic, changed our mindset to be another way, to be a different way. So we are a different people. We have been cut off from our ancestors and our traditional ways and how we used to do things. So, yeah, we are different in my opinion. That don't mean that
we can't come together
on some common ground.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And try to move forward. But we also have to acknowledge our differences too. I mean, you see
this
that. You saw that in the movie. You saw that in the movie, that there's a difference from a Killmonger and the people of Wakanda, the people of on the continent.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah, I'm in agreement more with Mufasa on that one, because I do think that we're different. But like you said, the bloodline and ancestry, I believe, does go back to the continent. But you got to remember, you know, we was over here. I'm hearing some background noise, y'all. If you can mute your phone if you're not speaking, we could be good. But yeah, I'm hearing. I'm still hearing some noise. But yeah, I do think that. Okay, we good. I just continue. But yeah, I do think that we different, just based on, like you said, us being over here, and we got to remember that there's been a lot of mixing going on as well. So a lot of us have different blood types in us. You know, we could have some European, we have some Native American, you know, just different type of bloodlines that have all been mixed up within us. And not to mention the psychology once we got over here, the programming that's been instilled in us, how we've lost tradition, how we've lost ways and different spiritual systems that we used to have, that I believe a lot, well, more people in Africa, on the continent, they still have a certain type of ties to their African spiritual systems, you know what I'm saying? And there's not as much mixing, so their bloodline is a lot more pure and goes back to, you know, back to their ancestors, stronger than our bloodline that has been mixed up and, you know, watered down over the years that we've had these different type of, you know, situations over here in America. So I think we are, you know, we share that some bloodlines, but I think we are different. But, you know, like you said, I think we still can build and we still can learn and progress and move forward as a people, because one thing we do have in common is oppression and colonization. You know, that's the common thread that we all see. And a lot of, truth be told, a lot of the Africans on the continent, they are not truly African, because a lot of them take on English ways. They may take on French ways. They may speak French and English and all these other type of things. So it's really about where your mindset is. Like, you know, are you Igbo culture, you know, which is an ancient African tradition in Nigeria, the Igbo? You know, are you Voodoon? Do you study the Dogon, Mali? Like, have you really kept your ancient traditions throughout the colonization? You know, and that would be something we would have to ask our, you know, African brothers and sisters. But, yeah, just, you know, I think we are different. There is a link, but we are different through the, based on what we've been through, you know. And with the movie as well, you know, it showed how, you know, Eric Stevens, I got his full name this time. I ain't going to even call him Killmonger, because I think that's a negative term. But Eric
Killer.
Stevens was born in Oakland, right? So he grew up and he saw firsthand the oppression and the atrocities that was committed on Black Americans. So that fueled a lot of his anger, you see. But when it comes to T'Challa, since Wakanda had never been colonized, he didn't know the extent of how this European Caucasian can go. Like, he was just unaware. It's like a kid being green and just not aware of the danger that you're in when you're letting this CIA guy come into Wakanda, when he's going to report back to the CIA, who's been known for destabilizing African people all over the country. So I think with that dynamic, we as Black people in America, we are closer to the quote-unquote, well, I ain't going to even say that, but we are closer to the oppression than a lot of the Africans are, because what they do in Africa is put a Black leader in place, but yet he's controlled by Western powers. And so you don't really see the problem as being the oppressor, because they hide in the background and they're just using this Black corrupt leader to oppress the population, you see. So it's a different dynamic, but we actually see it firsthand, you know. So, yeah, I just want to get y'all take on that. Like, do y'all think that Killmonger anger, as far as he can see it and the things that he said, do you think that was justified, you know, as far as him being angry?
Yeah, he deserved to be angry.
I think it was justified. Yeah, I do. I think it was justified. I think my anger itself, the emotions, was a justifiable emotion and feeling for him to, you know, not be so bright about everything that happened to him. I just kind of veer off with his tactics and how he responded to that emotion, how he reacted to that emotion, how it caused him to, his social skills to be not so pleasant to those around him.
Right.
The way for him. Yeah, I think it was, it is a way for him to have used that anger, and he could have done things, other things, and done things differently.
Yeah, I'm telling you, he had the right to be angry. My thing is, which I want to hash out with you, but two, I don't, I'm more chopping the dude to try to make him rage raging bull.
Right, you kind of breaking up, bro.
What more did y'all want T'Challa to do to build the bridge with this raging bull? To me, I know Raja feel differently. She feel like T'Challa and them didn't do enough. But I'm like, I mean, he shot the man previously and took Claw out of his clutches. So he already was tripping like, dead. You know what I'm saying? So my thing, what more did y'all want T'Challa to do to pat this dude up?
Well, for me, yeah, go ahead, Rock.
Well, I was just going to say that there's so many things he could have done. He definitely just didn't have that one option. You know, the list can go on as far as what he could have done. One way that could have helped, I think if they would have done something that would make Killmonger feel more welcome amongst his people, and if they were truly sorry and had compassion for Black Panther's father actually leaving him down there, then why not display some of that compassion and show him that they were sorry and were not in agreement with what Black Panther's father did, versus making their actions to me, and I'm not even Killmonger, but the actions to me made me think that he was in agreement. Outside of just him actually saying it, his actions seemed like he was in agreement with what his dad did. So I think if he would have displayed a little more welcomeness to him, you know, would have been better off. That would have,
they weren't sorry.
You know, kind of. that would have kind of put a little damper on his anger. Because that was part of his anger, to not feel included. That was a big part of his anger, why he was angry, because he didn't feel included and welcome into Wakanda. So if they would have just alleviated that, even if just a little piece of it, I'm sure that would have helped, because that was the source of it.
Right. And
yeah,
I agree with that. You say what?
Sorry. No, I was saying, but they weren't sorry. The people
you
weren't sorry.
Breaking, man. Well, T'Challa was. Remember when T'Challa was going to see his old dude, you know, and when he talked to his uncle, he was saying, what happened to the boy? Like, why did you leave him? So it seemed like T'Challa felt some type of way about them leaving Killmonger in Oakland, you know. But when it came time for him to express those things to Killmonger, he didn't express those same type of sentiments, you know what I'm saying? He just kind of got in his feelings, because let's look at it from Killmonger's standpoint. The only way he was going to really get into Wakanda was to bring Claw, you know, because he knew Claw had killed the previous king, which was T'Challa's father. He knew Claw had killed him. So the only way to get back in was to bring Claw. So that was by any means necessary, you know. And when T'Challa saw the ring, he was like, I saw a man with the ring, with my grandfather's ring on his neck. And, you know, he kind of knew, was kind of putting the story together. When Eric Stevens came to Wakanda, he should have been like, you know, I know who you are. I kind of know the story. I don't agree, or some type of, just express some type of way to where they could have, you know, could have worked it out, or possibly attempted to, you know. I know Killmonger was hell bent on getting that throne, it seems like. But I think if you know, if maybe T'Challa would express some type of remorse or resentment for what his father did, just like, you know, bro, I didn't understand, you know, I wasn't there, I would have did something different, you know, just express the same thing he was expressing to his father, he could express that to Killmonger, in my opinion.
Yeah, see, can y'all hear me now?
Yeah, you good now, loud and clear, bro.
Yeah, see, that's the way, I mean, us being blacks here in America, that's how, you know, the mindset, we looking at it like they should be embracing us. But what I keep trying to remind people is Wakanda was its own nation in the nation. So they was looking at Killmonger as an outsider. So when he showed up on the scene, he was an outsider. So, I mean, of course we're not going to be nice to him, because we don't know who he is. We know a little bit about the man, but at the end of the day,
Black Panther knew who he was. And the elder gentleman who Killmonger ended up killing, they knew who he was.
But they didn't know enough about this man to just let their guards down. He's still a person that just came into their town.
But letting their guards down, Mufasa, think about it. They have so much more power over this guy. They didn't have to just absolutely be very vulnerable, but they could have still welcomed him a little more softer than what they did. I mean, make a better judgment and assessment. I mean, what was he going to do? He one person in Wakanda. And if they was against him, it wasn't nothing that he could have done to them. I don't think Black Panther had to be that tough on
him. Me being T'Challa, he messed all that up when he came in there and said, I did what your king couldn't do. He lucky right then and there he didn't get his head chopped off for insulting the king. That was the insult. Who are you to speak on my name? You know what I'm saying? Put some respect on my name. That's what T'Challa
said. Yeah, but that was that was done.
My name.
That was done well after he knew that they wasn't accepting him. He came up in there and was like, "Oh, they on some bull. I see this right now." So he didn't. He never was able to, you know, release nothing. They didn't even give him
the
opportunity to release something. So he was sent.
That was the first thing he said. That shows his disrespect.
Right, because look, though.
He was disrespectful.
Yeah, because look, it's even debatable if Killmonger was an outsider. That's debatable. Look at it like this, Mufasa. Let's say you're from the continent, right? You move to America, and you have a child. Your child is born here, first-generation America.
Mm-hmm.
And if your child goes back to where you came from, is that child an outsider? No. He's part of your lineage. You dig what I'm saying? So that's even debatable because I can understand from a cultural standpoint he's an outsider because he wasn't raised in the culture and know the ways and traditions and all that stuff. But from a bloodline standpoint, he was Wakandan. You dig what I'm saying? That's how he was able to challenge for the throne. You did. That's why the people were like,
"Huh?" But they say
you can't break it up, bro.
They say he got this war dog tattoo, but we have no records of him. That was discussed before they even brought him into the presence, into the the royal chamber to have the conversation.
But
they
all
they know is he got a ring on.
His father was Wakandan. Just like I said now, with that question I asked, is your child an outsider to where you come from? That's a question.
I would say, I'm going to answer. Let me go and say this part, though, but I'm going to answer that question. Because, like I said, that's why they was asking, he said, asking who am I? Kids asking who am I?
Right.
So they still didn't really, they didn't know who he was, okay? He was this. He probably told me.
Tony, you can't break it up, bro. I can't.
He was like, forget who you are. You just came in here and insulted me. So T'Challa didn't care who he was.
Right. Right. Well, that may have been... That may have been a problem. That was his cousin. That was his first cousin.
We are talking about the king of Wakanda. We ain't just talking about just a commoner. So you have to put some respect on the title of his name. You know what I mean?
He just became king. Like, it ain't like he was in there for years and years.
Yeah, it don't matter. King is king. At the end of the day, king is king. So, like you say, now, going back to your question, yeah, my child would be considered outsider. Because, first off, if I was I was a traitor. You know, he betrayed Wakanda. He had claw. To get the vibranium, Clara set off the explosion and killed some kind of people. So at that point, he is now a traitor. Now, my son is a traitor as well. So me being a protector of my country, I can't just let somebody up in my country. I got to, really thoroughly go over you. Not only was your daddy was a traitor, but you came up in here disrespecting too. So y'all want to be too nice. And I understand why, because we looking at it from the African-American viewpoint. But if we on that side of the field, we got to be strict. We can't just let anybody come up in our country and just be loving and embracing. You know what I'm saying?
But you love and embrace. See, I ain't do it. But you love and embrace.
That's
why
I know we do. That's why this tie into our conversation about being different, because everybody that look black ain't black and ain't the same. We want it to be that way.
Yeah.
No,
let me be clear. I'm I'm not saying, and I'm pretty sure Brother Kevin is not saying, that you welcome somebody that's going to come in there. Like, if Kim Monk come in there, keep the same attitude, keep the same aggression, still disrespectful, then no, you don't welcome that type of behavior in there. But if he's willing to marinate himself, calm down, and be as a Wakanda, then there's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing wrong with allowing someone to be a Wakanda if they have that bloodline and they are Wakanda. They fighting and standing for the same thing. No one is suggesting that, yeah, you just let anybody in there just because. Yeah, no.
Right.
You don't, you isolate yourself from any type of foolishness anyway. So that stands across the board. But if he's willing to come in there, and I think because he is his cousin, I think he did stand a fair opportunity to come in there and do right. But they didn't allow that. I think because the way the introduction was, it hindered that from happening. I still feel like if they would have been a little more welcomed, then saw how he would have reacted and responded. If he would have still just been like, oh, nah, screw y'all, middle finger, I'm going to come do this, then, yeah, that's understandable. Cut them off, do whatever you got to do. Then that's fine. But to not give someone an opportunity that you, that Black Panther already feel that was done wrong from the beginning by his father. So why don't you give him an opportunity your father was wrong?
Exactly. He should understand the rage and at least, you know, offer some type of, you know, olive branch or some type of peace, even though, now, I want to be clear here, too. Killmonger did come in with a lot of anger and aggression and force. However, if you're knowing that your father, you know, left this child basically to the wolves, you know, you left this child to the wolves in America, then you should be understanding, like, okay, I understand he's angry. Let's try to talk and calm him down. But my thing is, you can't let every Black person in, but we know you can't let the white people in. You let the CIA in. Just because he was nice, that's the trick. That's the deceit of the devil, to be nice. You dig what I'm saying? So I didn't feel that at all. Like, I didn't feel that at all. Like, you go not let your brother, you're not going to welcome your brother in, but you showing this white CIA guy all the secrets. Oh, no. Sorry to tell you. Great movie.
Yeah, that's
sticking to them. Great movie, but
that's
no, we can't do that. Yeah, that don't balance.
Larry,
we can't do that one.
I'm going to put myself in the challenge, too. He lucky that I even let him speak. He's lucky I even gave him opportunity to say a word.
If that's the case, then Black Panther lucky that somebody found his butt down in that water then. If he gonna take that approach where he gonna feel like, well, he's lucky that I let him. That's why it ended up as it is, and that's why so many things even in today's time and even in the past go like that, because somebody feel like you lucky. I'm doing you a favor.
Right.
And that's not the right attitude to have.
He in my land. Yes, he lucky. I am doing him a favor.
Okay. Well, with that attitude,
you in my land, but you came in here and disrespected me. I am the king. You insulted me off the flip. I ain't got to be nice to you. You came on my set talking down. He should have me this throat. Cousin or no cousin, you come in here on my set, I'm the king, and you going to disrespect me? I'd have cut his head off in the end of the movie. Shoot.
But you would let the white CIA guy in?
Nope. No, I wouldn't. Now we're going to get on the white guy. Let's flip to him. No, I wouldn't have. When he got shot, when the white boy got shot and we was in Korea, I'd have stuck that bead in his back and bounced.
I wouldn't even did that. You nicer than me. I wouldn't even did that. But what I'm saying is, see,
I only did that because he saved, you know, my homegirl. That's the only reason I stuck the little bead in his back, because he jumped in front of my baby, my wife, my girl, and he saved her. So you say, my girl, I owe you one. Boop, I popped the bead. No, I would just
took him back to Wakanda? No.
I'm
from Wakanda. I'm like old girl. I'm like what's her name? What's her name? Ayo. Akoye. Akoye. I'm Akoye. I'm loyal to the throne. And
right. But look at this though.
Go ahead.
Now I was just gonna say this is a dynamic we gotta keep in mind, because you were saying if you was T'Challa. See, we got to already keep in mind that T'Challa already expressed his discontent with what his father did. He already understood that his father was wrong for leaving the boy to the wolves in America. You see, he already expressed how he felt about that. He was like, it was not right, father. It was not right, you know. So he already expressed that. So that's why he should have understood him coming in with the attitude, and he could have kind of diffused the situation, so to speak, being the king, being level-headed, you know, having a big heart. It was up to him as a person of authority to be like, okay, we can try to diffuse the situation. Now, if he tried and he couldn't reason with Killmonger, then that's another story.
Right.
But we never got to see. Yeah, we never got to see that. You know, we never got to see that.
That's exactly why his daddy said, you a kind man with a good heart, and it's hard for a man with a good heart to be king.
That's this is true.
That's he gonna always be going through some mess because that good heart of his. His heart should be good for his people. At first it was, but then his woman got all in his head because she wanted to be the activist and saving everybody. So he following his boot, the black woman's
right.
guy. So he following his baby boo in her belief. Instead of saying,
right.
baby, look, I love you, I care about you, but I'm all about my nation. Okay? Now, you want to go out there and be a freelance and saving the world? Okay, baby, I'm going to miss you. You go ahead. But I'm about Wakanda. And actually, you should be too. And if you ain't following my orders, you're a traitor too. Basically.
Okay.
Well, let's do this because I want to bring it to present day, and then we could probably tie into the movie as well. But I want to ask y'all too. I want to ask Mufasa first, and then we'll let Rye go in because I know she probably have a little more information, being that she has visited the continent and visited Africa. So, but I want to ask y'all. Do y'all know any Africans from the continent, and what has been your experience when dealing with Africans from the continent? And I give Mufasa first.
Okay, I speak on one person that I met, and I want to say she was from Nigeria. I can't think of her country right off the top of my head, but been here for about 3 years now, 3 to 4
mm-hmm.
years. She was actually a member of, they got a council here called the African Diaspora Council, and she was a member of that organization. And having conversation with her about how she feel the relationship is between Africans and blacks, she said the blacks here treat her like a dog.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she said they have been very racist towards her. You know, her experience. She said her experience has not been well. She thought it would be good, but she said they definitely treat her differently. Now, I'm not gonna say she's been around. Some people, you know, everybody's not gonna treat her like that. But she might have just been the wrong type of black people that don't appreciate, you know, where she's from or whatnot. So she probably been around the wrong types. But her experiences here have been horrible. And I think it's been horrible to the point where it has changed how she looks at black people here. Where she's thinking about going back home. You know, come here, get her schooling. Because she wants to be an engineer.
Right.
Get her schooling and going back to the continent. But yeah, her from her discussions with me is dealing with
black people, they ain't been well. She said the women and the men mistreat her.
That's deep. That's deep. That's unfortunate thing.
It really hurted me for her to say that. I was like, man, that's an unfortunate thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, and love, Lachey, yeah. What about you? Do you know any Africans, and what has been your experience as far as how they speak about the relationship between us, you know, between Africans and American Africans on the continent?
Yeah, I know a few. I definitely know a few.
And what country, if you can name, what countries are they from, if you can?
Yeah, Nigeria. I know a lot of Africans here that's from Nigeria. I know some that's from Ghana as well. I think that may be it. I feel like I have actually met some too that were good friends from where is Wycliffe from?
He's from
Haiti.
Yeah, hey.
Okay. I had the pleasure of...
That's an African, too. Yeah.
Yeah, I had the pleasure of knowing some from there as well. And I think a lot from my experience, I think it depends on where they're from. When they move here and their environment, what they associate themselves with and with the environment that they put themselves in is going to determine. Because like Mufasa was saying, the young lady, she probably was just around the wrong types of black people, because, you know, we could also, you know, struggle with feeling like, oh, you know, when it comes to things that we don't understand and we're not familiar with. So I think what he said was valid. So in other words, I think depending on where you are and the people that I've known and from Africa, a lot of them do have the mentality like a European. A lot of them do. Until they get to know you, I think they, for some reason, they may start off like that, have that base premise until they get to know someone. I don't think they are, at least from the ones that I've known, I don't think that they are afraid to get to know you, because I think somewhere in their head they figure that, okay, a lot of this feelings of this premise that I have about them is from maybe TV, things like that. So from my experience, they are willing to get to know an American, a black person. But if you show them that you maybe like, you know, somebody that just don't work because they value, you know, something or someone that's being productive because from where they come from, they take great pride in working hard and studying and things like that. So if you're not within what they think is a quality type of a person, they do have those European judgmentals towards us. And I think like over, and when you're over there, it's a whole nother ball game, because you're from America. They automatically think that you're well off and you're rich and you stuck up, and even when you're black, you know, I think when you're black, they still kind of look at black people like almost like just like the Europeans. I think when you're there and they judge you, they just judge you as an American, not always so much just because you're black. I think it's like you're a rich American versus you're a rich black American. You know what I'm saying? They just think that's from my experience
okay.
You know, with the ones I've known, and I know quite a few.
Indeed, indeed. And, yeah, I had the opportunity to know, you know, some first-generation Africans. Actually, we went to school with, from grade school, we went to school with some first-generation Africans at, you know, from grade school up through high school.
And I also had the opportunity to know some Africans from Nigeria, Ghana, and Senegal while in college. And I would always say, like, the relationship, you know, has always been good. It's always been respectable. Now, they do have, you know, it's about perception, right? So since we don't control the media and the perception of our image, the stuff that goes out and the stuff that they see can be misconstrued, and, you know, they may have these different, misleading. They may have these different stereotypes about people, which, you know, is kind of understandable to a certain extent. But like I said, the relationship that I've had personally has always been good and respectful, and it's always been a mutual respect. However, they have expressed to me on, you know, a certain number of occasions that, you know, it's a lot of opportunity in America, and Black Americans just are not taking advantage of those opportunities. Like, it's like a sentiment to where it feel like we may be doing, you know, a little too much complaining and not enough action, because they feel like the opportunities are here compared to where they may come from. You see what I'm saying? Because poor here is not poor on a continent. You know, even though there's a lot of development, there's a lot of people, you know, a lot of big cities, and it's not all huts in Africa like they make it seem. But the poor there and the gap between the rich and the poor is definitely way wider than it is here. You see what I'm saying? Like, if you poor living in the projects here, that's like living in a penthouse compared to some shanty towns or some rural towns in Africa with no running water, no plumbing. You know, you got to, you know, bathrooms and all these things outside. Like, it's just a different dynamic, you know, and they have expressed that, because a lot of them do come over here and they stick together flat out, you know, because they don't, you know, it's yep. not all about associating with Black people, but they stick together because they like, look, yep. these are the people from my culture, and this is what, you know, they understand, and they stick together, which I don't see nothing wrong with that. And like I said, based on, you know, based on the perception that's given to
they
us.
On
even,
code. They on yeah, code, they, Brother the King.
Facts. They are on code. And I was going to say, based on the perception that Black people in America have of Africa is not right. I don't think it's a fair perception. What would you say, Tanya? Like, do you think before you went, or just in general, just knowing about Africa and the stuff that they show us on TV here in America, how do you think that perception is based on reality in Africa? Do you think it's
That's a great question, because when I first went over there, that was actually one of the questions that they asked me, because they had assumed that my perception of Africa would be just as it was, as they kind of show on American TV. However, mm-hmm. for me, this is only for me personally, I didn't think that it was all like that. I didn't think that. So I didn't think that they was as you know, as rich as us either, though. But I mean, with today's time and technology, I'm like, well, I know his house over there. I never felt like, you know, they was over there walking around naked and just, you know,
right.
living in little huts and fighting lions. I didn't think that.
Yeah, but that is what they sell to us over here. Like, you really
exactly.
got to do the outside.
One reason why they asked me that, because they thought that I was, they see that, but they were surprised to learn that I wasn't. And they was telling me, they was like, I'm surprised because everybody thinks that about us. And I'm like, well,
exactly.
I didn't think
yeah.
that. I really didn't. Yeah. There is a difference, you know. They have homes. Their homes is not as, you know, as comforting, I guess you would say, depending on what you want to consider comfort, you know. But they just, it's just not as developed, you know, as ours over here.
Right, right. And that's what I was saying. Like, go ahead, bro.
No, I'm gonna go ahead and finish your point because it might take me a second to get this out. What I got to say.
Yeah, no, I was just gonna say, and that's why I was saying, like, the poor, you know, the different standards of living are different compared to America and Africa. But then on the flip side, like, our perception of them is way off. But then just imagine their perception of us, right? And this would be based off hip-hop, based on what they see on TV, based on movies. You would think that black people in America are just so violent and dysfunctional, which we are to a certain extent, but you would think that's the majority of black people in America. You know, if you were just an African, you just based it off the news, the TV, and propaganda, you would think that, you know, these are a violent group of people. They kill each other. They got gangs. They riot. They, you know, all this and that. You would just have these different stereotypes in their head. So I think that's one thing we got to keep in mind, as other people have created these perceptions for us not to connect. You dig what I'm saying? These perceptions were created for us not to connect and not have a sense of relationship with each other, in my opinion, you know. So, but go
you
ahead,
know what, let me point something real fast. Real fast, I want to point something out about their TV over there.
Mm-hmm.
It was, they have one American TV, I mean station. You know what they play?
What's that?
Videos. Music videos.
Right. Right.
Yeah, that's not surprising.
I believe it.
That's all they play on. They have one station, and that's all they play,
right.
Music videos.
Now, I do want to clear this up, too. Now, that's just one country, because we got to remember Africa is a large land, about 3.5 Americas can fit in Africa, and it's a land of 54 countries, right? So that may not be the same across the land. You know what I'm saying? That's just one particular country.
Right,
so
right.
I just want to keep that in mind for the listeners, that this is a vast place. It's huge, and different countries and different cultures have different ways of life. But I think that's an important point, because what's promoted over there is probably typically the music. You know what I'm saying? And that's how they get their ideas of black Americans, through the music mostly, if I had to, you know, make a guess. But go ahead, Mufasa.
I want to say this. This is a you know, complex subject, and it stands upon it, but let me start by saying, now, you know, I said we are different. I do still pay homage and believe in Marcus Messiah Garvey's plan, you know, as far as us uniting, you know, Africans throughout the diaspora. So I'm down with it. But my butt is me being down with the power structure, and knowing that I consider myself as black, and I believe that black people should make their own nation. And there's nothing wrong with us having our nation, because here in America, we had a show about classifications of what we are. And at that time, I identified myself as black. And by identifying myself as black, I feel like we do need our own nation. And then maybe we'll get respect from African people as well. Now, outside of that, the only thing I would have to do for myself is, if I want to go and take a African DNA test to find out what country I'm from over there. You know what I'm saying? Now, in my spirit, I believe that I feel a connection with Sudanese people. That's for some reason. That's a whole other story for me to get into, but I have a bond with Sudanese people. So if we take the black power to the side and say, okay, taking the black nation out of it, we're talking about Africa. I still know that the different factions of Africa, and this goes back, you know, thousands of years, that there were always different groups of people. It was everybody
Fact.
Wasn't just one.
Fact.
So
yeah.
I have
Fact.
To keep that in mind that even back then, before it was colonized, it was just not just one. We all one people. You know what I'm
Fact.
Saying? Now my thing
Fact.
Is we can be separate. We can not. We can know that there is a difference between us, but that don't mean that we can't be under a larger umbrella, you know, Pan-Africanism. I can
right.
have a black nation and still be able to sit at the table with brothers from Nigeria, from Kenya, from Sudan, from Libya. We could be
right.
able to sit down and have a discussion, knowing that. And I don't have to call myself an African, a straight African, to do that. If I did just want to be a part of a black nation. But outside of that, I would have to do myself. I need to do an African DNA test to see what land region that I match up with.
Right, indeed. Yeah, that's a good point. And even with the DNA test that I know a lot of black people in America are using that DNA test, it still doesn't get down to the specific tribe you're from, right?
Well,
because
that's
like you said, it can give
too.
You the region and the area, but like you said, there's different tribes within those different countries that
yeah,
you know have different.
You gotta take the
yeah.
African. The ancestry DNA one is too broad.
Right,
they
it's broad. Exactly.
They got an African ancestry one that they claim narrows it down greater, and that's the one I'm talking about. So we need to look into that.
Okay, yeah, that's a good deal. And you made another good point, too, because we got to remember, it's Africans all over this world. You dig what I'm saying? Due to colonization and them moving, kidnapping people and moving them around, the largest, like I don't know if y'all know this, but the largest population of Africans outside of Africa is in Brazil. You
yeah.
see, it's not even America, it's in Brazil. Then you got Africans in the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
You got Africans in Jamaica, Bahamas, St. Thomas, Negril, all these different places where Africans are, and they're the majority population based on the slave trade, colonization, and just based on us traveling the world even before that. You know, so we also have to keep that in mind. But I think the Africans in America, we have a unique experience because, like I said, we've seen the full wrath of the colonizer and, you know, racism, white supremacy. We've seen the full wrath, and we've been trying since we've been brought over here, we've been trying to liberate and free ourselves, you see.
Right.
So I think when it
right.
comes down
come
to
from nothing.
Yeah,
we come
nothing.
From nothing.
Yeah, we've actually been, like, we've lost our culture. Everything was just wiped away. So I think what it is, it's going to be up to the Africans in America to show and prove, basically get it together and come up out of this slump that we in, or this conquering or being dominated. We're going to have to come up out of this and show the world, you know, how to do this and how to treat people humanely and do these other things, because that's what we fight for, our humanity, to get it back. So I think once we do that, the Africans in Africa are going to show and prove as well. You know, it all happens in cycles and in time, because as we get conscious, they're too are going to get conscious as well. You see, because I know Christianity is very big in Africa. Islam, of course, is big in Africa. You know, a lot of these different religions are big, but we still have lost that ancient knowledge and African tradition that can help propel us to, you know, a better future. So I think we, as Africans in America, will be the leaders of this conscious movement as we move forward and try to liberate the diaspora of African people, you know.
Mm-hmm. And you know what, Brother Kev? That video you sent me, like, showing the young folks, the young African people, they was talking about different, like, the different issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I didn't get a chance to tell you, but that video disturbed me. Because as I'm looking at it, I'm looking at it, and I'm looking at our people over there getting away from their identity, and I'm like, y'all trying to look like black people over here. And we trying to get away from looking out of ourselves.
Right.
And it's like, man, y'all on the continent, and y'all changing y'all look. You know, you're wearing all these big wigs. To me, man, it just looks so. When I see an African woman with a big guy and wig on, it just it makes no sense to me. It don't even look like it's a fit. It looks out of place.
Right. But that's just like the women here. This is what we do. This is a product of colonization and being dominated. So, you know, I can't really fault them for that because I understand, because we got to think about it like this, bro. Think about it like this. America has the greatest economy on the planet, right? So they say America is, quote unquote, the leaders of the world. So by default, we are the leaders of the black world. That's by default. Not saying we taking this leadership serious or we doing anything, but by default of America being the leader based on its economic power that it got from free slave labor, that transfers to us as well. Even in our degenerate state, our music is the leader of the world. Our culture is the leaders of the world. Like, you could talk about from jazz to blues, R&B, hip-hop, all these things that we have created have resonated throughout the world. That doesn't happen in a lot of places. You know what I'm saying? So by them mimicking us, it sounds crazy because we've been brainwashed to mimic the European or white people. So only thing they're doing is just following our lead because we mimic them. We get blonde wigs. We do perms, and we think the standard of beauty is European and, you know, so on and so forth. So they're just following us based on America, quote unquote, being the dominant leader when it comes to economics and military might. You know, so I don't really knock them for that because I understand they just following what we doing. That's why I say if we get it together and once we start getting back to our natural selves and our natural mind, the world to follow. And once we that'll translate through our music as well. You know, that'll translate through our music once we put it out there, because it's a whole cultural shift. It doesn't happen in just one day or a week. Like, these things take time for, you know, people to get their mind right and for you to teach the children and they grow up and, you know, so on and so forth. So it takes a little time, but yeah, I don't really knock them for that because I understand it's just like African women over here with blonde wigs. You know, that's shit, almost the norm, you know? So, I mean, unfortunately, like, it's crazy here too, for real. Like, if you really look at it, you know what I'm saying?
It definitely is. It just seems so, you know, I just hate when I see the brothers and sisters that's on the continent. I mean, you on the continent. Maybe, well, you know, some of them don't know the whole history of us.
I was about to say. Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, to me, I'm looking at, like, if you knew the true history of what's going on in the world, I just couldn't imagine why you would want to change your appearance, why you would want to look like us when I'm thinking, like, y'all should know that we going through some things. We trying to get back to ourselves.
Right, they don't
trying
know.
To learn who we are. And it's like, y'all following us, but we lost.
Right, exactly. And that's it. You hit the nail on the head right there. They following us, but we lost.
But
exactly.
Unfortunately, everybody is not trying to get back to them, though. That's the harsh reality. Everybody's not. Everybody
that's
don't
true.
Realize.
You're right about that.
Right.
I don't care.
That's right. Some of them It's so far within their awareness that they're not even thinking about getting back. And that's why
right. It
may be easy for them to do a lot of things that they do and mimic and copy, you know, and say, okay, well, I want to put on the blonde hair. I want to get the contact lenses and things like that. And
bleaching their skin.
Bleaching the skin, yeah, I heard that was big in Nigeria and a lot of African countries, bleaching the skin, you know, which is crazy. But it's not even about getting back, but a lot of Africans, from what I've heard, are not privy to the historical knowledge that we in America have, like as far as Kemet and Egypt. That stuff has been suppressed over there, and they're not privy to that particular knowledge. Like, you got to understand, the missionaries went in there, the Christian missionaries and Islam, they went in there and laid it down.
Yeah.
Like, they went in there and just wiped out everything. If you're not a Christian, you're getting killed, or you go have to practice in secret. You know, so the missionaries went in there and really put Christianity out there. They got the white Jesus out there. So it's a lot of colonization of the mind going on that they're not privy to, that blacks in America are just now, you know, waking up to as of, you know, the 60s, 70s, and more recently with this, with the movement, conscious movement we have now that's going on. So, you know, they are victims in a sense and being colonized just like we are, but like you say, they following us. And we lost. You know what I'm saying? We trying to get back and find our roots, and they following us. So, you know, it's a lot of different dynamics.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Everybody is not trying to find their roots. That's just the harsh
reality.
Everybody's not. In fact, I hate to say this, but it seems anyway by how things go around that the majority of the culture is not trying to find their roots. I think we're slowly getting to, you know, a gradual state where it's more and more. But right now, I think the seesaw is down.
Right.
I don't think
we
left.
Yeah, we getting back to that. But look, the key word is roots, right? How do you have a foundation or a tree without the roots? You got to have the roots. This is what causes people to be lost. So I think it should be important for people to want to find your roots. Like, that grounds you. Like, a root is so important to the tree or to the plant. Like, how can you not want to get to the root of what you are and, you know, how you came to be? And these things are prominent questions that I think we just overlook and just like, hey, I'm going to just deal with this and now. But no, you have to have some type of foundation. Otherwise, you know, you'll be out here lost. You know, I think the root is very important. That's like, you can't have a tree without the roots. And the deeper the roots, the stronger your
tree
is.
Yeah,
you see what I'm saying?
But you know what makes this the roots go deep when they force and have and they compromise. So strong winds, things like that. Let's take a call.
Mm-hmm.
Let's try to see if we got time for a few callers right now.
Okay.
Let's take caller 314-616. Caller, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes. Peace, caller.
Okay, I do apologize. You know, guys, a lot of times I'm in and out. So what was the topic of the discussion again tonight?
Okay, no problem. We're talking about the relationship between Africans in America or black people in America versus Africans on the continent. So let me ask you, caller, do you know any Africans? Have you had conversations? And how do you perceive the relationship between the two?
Good question. I'll say this. I believe, I'm under strong impression that prior to colonialism and imperialism and all these other things that we've been experiencing, I think that relationship has always been in existence. When I look at people like J. Edgar Hoover and Lyndon B. Johnson signing memorandums to separate us, now through social engineering, we have been programmed on both ends to believe that one is better than the other.
Right.
So,
right.
you know, I've been telling people before, you know, I don't think that it's a coincidence that you'll find, you know, bones in Georgia and Florida and other parts of the so-called America that matches perfectly in alignment with people from the continent. And then you see, you can go to Africa right now and, you know, get among certain tribes and you'll see, you know, 1,000 people that look just like you. So I think that the relationship was always there, but through social engineering, there's been a separation. But, you know, I think that, that this is the only key to our liberation is if the black from the Caribbean, the black from the continent, and the black from the state unite.
Right.
So relationship-wise, I think that those have always been in existence. But, you know, if we go back to antiquity, we don't really know what kind of trade we did, what kind of, you know, separation was there. We don't know any of that. We have to rely on the information that's been supplied to us by white supremacy.
Right.
And of course,
right.
they're not going to give you an accurate answer. But relationship-wise, done to reconnect that relationship.
Indeed. Indeed. I agree.
And
so that's sense,
we're all under the same
right
oppressor.
We have that in common. If nothing else, we got that in common.
Let me ask you this, brother. Tell me, what do you think about taking an African ancestry DNA test so you can learn even more detail of what specific tribe or, you know, the tribe that you came from on the continent. That way you can even go farther to reach out to, you know, your exact roots.
My only issue with that is accuracy and who's actually the author of the test. I thought about taking the test last year for my birthday, but as I began to look into it more, you know, what is the actual accuracy? And you know, even if I take a test, you know, there's different tribes within that region.
Right,
and
right,
they can only
yeah.
give you a guessment. I mean, like, you know, if I take a test and, you know, I'm 14% Latin and, you know, 4% this and 8% like, how do I distinguish? You know, am I even from the continent? Were my people already here? You know, so that's something else that I question. Does every black person in America that takes this test, or their roots automatically, you know, stated back to the continent? And to me, that would be misinformation, because I don't think that everybody is originally from the continent. I believe that there were people that were actually here. And I think that we are all the same people. We just had different cultural practices and beliefs. That's what I think. But I could be wrong.
Yeah, I want to share with you that I heard that outside of, like, ancestry DNA, I'm hearing, and I'm going to do some more research on it, that there's another DNA test strictly based off, like we talking about tribal areas. So if you take this particular test, it's supposed to let you know which tribe you was a part of from the continent. I'm going to look into it, but that's what I was hearing. So I think that was, if that's the case,
but
that would be a
do you see
one.
What I'm saying, though? Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like let's say you take a test, and most of your DNA shows that you had people that were here because you are actually the Native American. You know, you should be just as sovereign as they are. So if you take that test, then what? You know, or if percentage wise you're more this or you're less of that, I think that my focus isn't so much on trying to understand what tribe I'm from. But the key word we have to tell ourselves is it doesn't matter if you're black or you're Native or you're African or you're Zulu or Yoruba, you're not white.
Right.
And that's the only thing that matters in the condition that you're in is what you're not. It's not what you are, it's what you're not.
Yeah, see, that's what we were talking about
right point.
Earlier. That's what we were talking about earlier in the show, where I said, as far as myself go, that's why I more so put myself on a Black Power Nation tip. And
there you go.
I want my nation here. But that's cool for me to, you know,
to still take a test and see if I'm from a tribe over there. But if not, it still hurt my feelings or not and whatnot, because I still subscribe to, even though I want a black nation here, but I still subscribe to Marcus Garvey and African system.
Right.
I'm going to upgrade black people at the end of the day, no matter
right,
what tribe.
Cause this, right, but this is the only thing we got to keep in mind, right? No matter where you go on the planet, Africa has the most resources, right? So whoever controls Africa controls the world. So even though you can have a black nation over here, you're still going to have to get your resources from Africa. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's all good.
So,
that's what I'm saying. We still have to sit at the table.
Right. We still got to go to Africa for the resources, everything, the power, everything. It's like Wakanda for real. Like,
because even those nations over there, they don't have. That's what Gaddafi was trying to make, a united region of Africa. So that lets you know that right now the whole continent is not united like it. They all look at each other. As,
right.
Being part of the different tribe.
That's true.
And also, guys, let's I think we have time for at least one more caller. So let's take another caller. We want to take caller 314-381. Caller, are you there?
Yeah, I was listening to the conversation.
Hey, caller. Thanks for calling in. Do you mind stating your name?
Oh, it's Mr. P, actually from the St. Louis area. But, I hear these discussions. Blacks in America are American citizens. They are not African. Now, they can say they are, but they aren't African. At this point in time in your history, that's where you feel. Let me give you, and you talk about a tree with roots. A tree that has half of its roots deep will fall over. So you can take your roots that take you back to Africa, but how about your roots that go to other places in the world? I mean, think about it. Where is Muhammad Ali when he followed his roots? Where did it take him to? Took him to Scotland. And there's nothing wrong with that. That intermixture between people around the world is actually what makes your immune system stronger. Africa has a lot of resources, but it's not the only continent that has resources. Russia has more gold than the continent of Africa do. Argentina and those countries in South America have copper and other resources too. The thing is what are you doing with those resources? And the funny thing about it is that if a black American went to the Akan in Ghana, you could not become an Omaheni or Obatan. Omaheni is a paramount chief. That's a lineage, a hierarchy, similar to what it was in Egypt. Those kings, those Amenhoteps and Ramesses, those were families that ruled at those particular times. It wasn't all of the common people. And you have the same thing in Africa today. In Ghana, you got the same thing. That paramount chief in those different regions, those are families. And outsiders cannot become a paramount chief. Jerry Rawlings was the president of Ghana. He could not become a paramount chief because he's part Scottish. I mean, that's just the way it is. Gaddafi was from a family.
Mr. P, this is Brother Mufasa. I got to ask you a question.
Yeah.
I always appreciate when you call in because, I really appreciate your insight on these things. But one thing I want to ask you is about what I was saying earlier about a black nation, a nation in a nation. That comes from even from studying Elijah Muhammad's program. Do you think that that's something that would be feasible for black people here in America?
Well, let's look at this. A nation, a recognized government nation, no, that's not allowed under the U.S. Constitution. But you do have, there are cities that was, you talk about Nixon under the behest of Floyd McKissick and Harvey Gantt, who was the mayor, I believe, in South Carolina, senator, he built a city for blacks in Warren County, South Carolina. North Carolina, not South Carolina, North Carolina. Right across the river from St. Louis, Brooklyn, Illinois. That was built for blacks. And you have several of them. Freedom Town in South Carolina. Of course, you have about 13 settlements still existing in Oklahoma. You got Whitworth, California. And, you know, there's a lot of them. And there's nothing keeping from blacks from going into those cities where they have the infrastructures of sewers, water, electricity. You got the protection of the United States, so ain't nobody going to be coming from across the ocean and invading you. Wouldn't that be a good place to start?
What we're going to have to worry about are the white supremacists in America, and the government is not going to protect us from those people. Now, we can debate. There's a few things that you said that I just want to address. One is it's actually debatable whether black Americans are American citizens. There's a Supreme Court case that's still on the books today. Look at the Dred Scott case. Look at the 13th, 14th
Amendment. The Dred Scott case
was
overruled by the 14th Amendment.
It was not because they did not have enough people to ratify that decision. If you look deep into that case,
but who would have to decide that? Congress
never
have. Congress have never accepted that. As it stands now, the 14th Amendment is as it is.
But black people's civil rights and constitutional rights are being violated every day. Look at Philando Castile. This man was shot, and he had a right to carry. He was exercising his Second Amendment right. This man was shot, and the police got off. Like, black people, our rights are being violated. Our constitutional rights are being violated every day.
Well,
so
but on the other hand, the other hand, the system do work for you. I carry. I walked up to police officers and told them that I would carry, and we went on with our conversation. You have protests down St. Louis. You got Brother Juma, I believe his name is. He walks around with his AR-15. You have, these things. So you have bad experiences and a whole lot of good. You got more good experiences than you do bad experience. Another point. If you saying that if white supremacists attacked you, the government, it's not the government, it would be the local police. But what happened if blacks was to attack white supremacists? You got 40 to 44 African-American gun clubs and organizations around the country. They all are affiliated some way or another, either directly or membership with the NRA. So would the government protect the white supremacists if any of them went to attack them?
Yes, all we got to do is look at history. All we got to do is look at history. That's the only thing we can measure these things by, is look at history.
Let me look at history.
When black folks were attacked in East St. Louis, did the government help?
Let me look at history. In Goldsboro, hang on for a second.
Attacked.
We all know those stories. We only got enough time. Let me get this out. In Goldsboro, Florida, in Stanford County, when blacks stood along Broadway Avenue and pulled shotguns, leveled shotguns on the Klan, the government didn't come and attack them.
Okay.
It's many cases like that. You just don't hear. We only talk about the bad, the cases that go one way. But getting back to Africa, if you did, see, here's the thing. No African country is going to let people come in there and outside group and say, well, we're going to form a nation. That's not going to happen.
Right. Agreed. I agree with
it's
that.
Not going to happen here in the United States neither, because the Constitution don't allow for that. But you can go into a area like those cities I mentioned and start building in those cities. Now, you can't keep others from coming into the city. Even Soul City, which Nixon done for McKissick in Warren County, North Carolina, they made it specifically sure this cannot be a designated black community, but the idea sounds good. And if you're going back to African country, then they looking for – you got opportunity to develop. You got opportunity to start business just like any other ethnic group that goes in there. And in some cases, you may even have an advantage. So are you ready to do that?
Pardon me? You've been to the continent yourself before, correct?
My wife has gone in.
So do you feel we do have a good relationship as far as, you know, blacks to with Africans? You think our relationship is pretty solid?
What's your relationship with Africans in the St. Louis area? The Nigerians. I work with Nigerians. What's your relationship with the Niger individually? Now, I ain't saying as a group or as a group. What's your relationship with the Nigerians out of the African Palace? Have you sponsored any Africans that's in this country to help them get established, go to school, get jobs, and so forth? That's where, see, you're in a better position than they are in many cases at the time. But, I mean, how are we using that?
Yeah,
right. That's a good point. That's a good point.
I don't have a relationship with none of them, to be honest with you.
Well, you got to start here before you go over there. Mm-hmm. You said that's funny, man. I had to laugh.
I did do some work. I sat down with that African Diaspora Council that was formed here. And I spoke with some of them before, but that was pretty much about it. I'm still in a little bit of contact or got some insight.
You know,
on
another
them,
thing, when the AU was talking about establishing a fifth region, and they were talking about providing for Africans in the diaspora, they were not talking about African Americans. Those are Africans who don't no longer live on the continent, but that's abroad working or whatever. Because, you know, they come here to work. They come here to generate income, and some of them come here and retire, go back home. When they die, they send their bodies back home. The Nigerians are highly intelligent and educated people.
Yes, agreed.
More so than any other ethnic group. They're here to work. They're here to extract, to build businesses. So Nigeria is going to be the second largest population at the end of this century. They would be a world power if everything goes, you know, accordingly. So that's opportunities. If you went over there to a tribe, what are we going to do, just sit down and just hang out? No, they ain't going to allow that.
Right.
Now,
no,
out of
no,
curiosity,
no,
if you want to move as an American, if you want to move back to Africa, I mean, what country is more accepting of you? Wow, are they all accepting of us coming back and becoming?
Well, it's not what country you would be more accepted. It would be what would you be more comfortable in. I don't think you would be, and I'm more best basing it on my own experience. I don't think you would be comfortable in one of those former French colonies like Togo or Benin,
Mali,
Cameroon.
Mali, Benin. Yeah, Mali.
And Mali is a Muslim country. I don't you know you're not coming from the adherences that they demonstrate in the Muslim countries. In Egypt, them people that call a prayer go out all over the city. They pray five times a day, and you know they have a whole different culture in Egypt. I couldn't live in Egypt. I could visit, but I couldn't live there. East Africa, like Ethiopia and
Somali,
it's a different culture.
Eritrea. Yeah, it's a lot different. But like we were saying earlier,
would be like a Ghana or even a Nigeria.
Yeah, Africa has 54 countries. It's a large continent. So it's really not just, you know, one way or where what country is going to accept you. You got to find, you know, where you would most fit in. Now, from what I hear, the countries that are most like American have been colonized or Europeanized. Nigeria is one of those countries that Christianity has really got a foothold in. You see, and there's a lot
of Christian because that's what they want to be. Look, they Christian because that's what they want to be.
It was forced on them.
Well, now let's read a book called Male Daughters, Female Husbands. And in that book, it tells you that the British had never seen women like Nigerian women, like the Yoruba. And everything that they attempted to try on them didn't work. They maintain in areas, they maintain it. The northern area of Nigeria is Muslim. It's not Christian. You got areas in Ghana. Northern area of Ghana is Muslim. And those people would drop. You have tradition in those countries also that's prevailed. You know, we think about colonization.
Yeah.
Colonization only Europeans use African countries in under the term of colonization because they didn't want to be bringing Africans to Europe because they knew they was going to multiply and so on and so on and so on. Also, why not grow your food, the food that you need to eat? You grow it in those tropical areas and export it back to your country. The farmers that grew the food sold it to the Europeans on the coastal cities. They didn't go in there and just take stuff because they didn't have enough people to do that.
Now, sir, you seem like you're a man of history. You know they went in there and took that stuff.
Okay, now let's use some common sense. Hang on. Let's use some common sense. Let's use some common sense. If you growing food, Europeans didn't have no. See, your whites didn't go into the interior. Right today, people from Kumasi in the northern areas of Ghana, they bring food, truckloads that they grow, yams and things, down to Accra to the markets. Now, if you're dealing with somebody and they didn't pay you one time, you think you're going to deal with them again? Think about it.
These people are master deceivers. Of course, they come in. They can come in with a lot of things.
Brother Kevin, before you answer that, we're going to because we're running out of time. I want to try to get at least one more caller in. So I'd like to thank the caller for calling in. And we're going to go on to area code 612-407. Caller, are you there?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you. Peace, Colin.
Thank you for calling in, young man. If you'd like to say your name and where you're calling from.
Yeah, my name's Mike. I'm calling from Minneapolis. I just wanted to say, as far as issues between African-Americans and Africans, both in this city and in Seattle, where I have a cousin that lives, there's a lot of tension. Like, I myself, I'm African. And all the way going back to the 90s when Africans immigrated in large numbers to Minneapolis, where I'm from, and into Seattle, immediately there was a lot of tension between the two. And what I've noticed recently is a lot of them, they get upset at the fact that the Africans came in and basically immediately started, starting up their own businesses, starting up their own credit unions, and were just out there making things happen in the community, and now they have a foothold in certain areas where the blacks haven't even done that at all. I mean, in a lot of the black areas in our cities, most of the businesses are ran by Arabs and Asians. Like, you don't see African-Americans even controlling the business within their own neighborhood at all in our city. And I feel a lot of it has to do with that. And culturally, too. And lastly, I'll just say the last point, because you brought up the point with the previous caller about Christianity. I think you got to be specific to region, because I'm Ethiopian, and in our country we had Christianity all the way back to the 2nd century, before the Europeans.
Fact.
So,
fact.
Just to put that out there.
Yep, indeed. Good point. That's a very good point. And, yes, I am familiar with, I do know that in Minneapolis there are a lot of Ethiopians and Eritreans in that particular city. So, you brought up some good points as well. So, thank you for the call. We appreciate that.
Yes, sir.
We appreciate
that,
Bill. Yep, thank you. So, yeah, he brought some good points because this is the thing. When Africans do come into the country, they do take advantage of the opportunities. Like you said, a lot of them, they will stick together and they will use opportunities to advance and, create money or generate wealth for them and their family, which is understandable, which is what you should do. And I think a lot of times we as African Americans may get complacent and not fully take advantage of all that we have, even though we know it's a lot of systematic and a lot of mental hurdles that we have to overcome, as a people. But we should be looking at them as an example of how to kind of move and stick together, if nothing else. You see what I'm saying? We can use that model of how they come over here and stick together. We can use that model to stick together as well. It looks like we got a minute to the live stream. This has been a good build. I do want to thank all the callers and all the supporters. We thank you. This is CMR. We will be back next week for a powerful build. Please join us. Again, thank you all the callers. Thank you all the supporters. This is Brother Kev, Mufasa Ra, and Ra Star. We are Collective Minds Radio. And
tune in to us next week. We'll see y'all later. Peace.